Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and all of Southern California. I'm Farley Malaris, and you're listening to Astrological Metaphysical Radio, the phenomenon of the 80s. Also known as the Astrology Hour, on KFOX, 93.5 FM, your talk alternative.
This show is being rebroadcast, so traffic stinks. But if you're listening live, then we are having a no-forecast Monday edition of Astrological Metaphysical Radio. So without further ado, let's go to our no-forecast version of the Astrology Hour and see what the questions are. And good day to you, good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, Stephen. How are you? Oop, let's put him. There you go, Steve.
Yes, hi.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have something you said on a program a couple weeks ago. It was a repeat program about dating from alcohol and, marijuana and stuff. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, particularly the alcohol.
Well, you see, the higher mind actually uses the body as a transmitter to the soul, the conscious mind. See, the multidimensional self of the human being all works through the vehicle of the body. The body is almost like a transmitter and a receiver at the same time. And the chakras that are on the body, the seven chakras, the seven energy points that are located basically in the groin, the spleen area, also the stomach, the heart, the throat, the brow, and right on top of the head, those energy points are extremely sensitive, especially to toxic effects. Like, if you were somebody that smoked cigarettes or smoked pot, you might not have as control over your heart chakra where your lung area is. And also, same with alcohol. The stomach and the spleen, obviously, right near the liver there, is going to be shut down. So many times we do find that meditation and living the spiritual lifestyle or getting in touch with the higher parts of your own self or perhaps your guides would be situations that would encourage being more sober. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I love having a beer when I watch a football game, but I think I enjoy my spiritual growth more. And if you really think it's that important, cut out.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm very sensitive, not just emotionally, but I think psychically.
Uh-huh.
And there was a time when I used to be able to have a beer or two, and it wouldn't affect me that much. But I haven't had but one beer in about 12 years, maybe two. And when I do drink one beer, it's like drinking 10 shots of whiskey to me.
Yes.
It's like when you become more intuitive and more in touch with your spiritual nature and more in touch with some of the multidimensional parts of yourself, and you do make contact with your guides, you also reach a bliss-like state that dwarfs what you might feel on marijuana or alcohol.
Right.
See, like, the effects that people get from drinking alcohol, see, the reason why they call it intoxicated, notice the word toxic is in the intoxicated, because alcohol is definitely poison to a human being.
Right.
So what you're doing is you're giving yourself a mild poisoning. And in the morning, the hangover you feel is the result of the body fighting to overcome the poisonous effect.
But it's important for me to hear. Appreciate hearing this because, like I say, I feel my spiritual growth accelerating, and that's going to be hard, but I guess it's part of the discipline.
Well, you know, when you get into advanced meditation and you find yourself trancing out in the car, which I don't advise people to do unless they're advanced, or you get into a deep trance meditation before you go to bed like I do every night, are able to astral project in the morning, you get in touch with different realms of the universe that make drinking a beer seem very ludicrous at that point, okay?
Right, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Nadine on line 3. Hi.
Hi there, Farley.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for being there. What aspects of the parent or child's chart, you know, houses, planets, whatever, shows a probability or chance for abuse of those children?
Well, usually, if you have any planets for a child, okay, for any human being, if you have planets in the first house and there are oppositions to those planets, then that could show potential abuse or at least what we would refer to as heavy spanking. You know, like, I didn't get spanked much in my life. I had a Scorpio moon in the first house, which is an emotional ordeal. So I got yelled at a lot. In fact, I got screamed at a lot, in which cases sometimes I think I would have been preferred to be spanked. So water planets or any planets in the first house under square would result in an emotional trauma for the child. Any other planets, particularly Earth or fire in the first house, that are under opposition would show possible abuse or intense spanking or physical abuse. Scorpio planets are Pluto in the first house, could show sexual abuse or molestation or oppositions from Scorpio planets or squares from Scorpio planets. Also, oppositions to the rising sign may also show abuse, and squares to the rising sign could show emotional abuse. If Mercury is involved, or Gemini, in the first house or in the opposition or square, it could show a higher abuse of mental and psychological anxiety in the childhood. Also, we always look at the chart ruler. The chart ruler is the ruling planet that controls the sign rising in the east. In other words, if you're Virgo rising, your chart ruler would be the ruling sign of Virgo, which is Mercury. And if that planet is under opposition stress, that could also show abuse. So oppositions to the chart ruler are first house planets could show abuse. Does that help?
Yes, and that would be in the child's chart, so it's not necessary to study the chart of the parent.
Yes, it is. The parent's chart, an abusive parent may be a person that would have planets in the fifth or the fifth house lord under opposition stress. So squares to fifth house planets or squares to the fifth house lord could show dumping too much emotional and mental anxiety on their children. Oppositions to fifth house planets or the fifth house lord could show being too physical. And if Scorpio or Pluto's involved in any of that, it could show a sexual karma of molestation involved too. So it's the fifth house for the parent, and it's the first house for the child.
For the child, okay.
Does that help you any?
Yeah, that's a lot of information.
That's what Monday's all about on the Astrology Hour.
Okay,
thank you very much, Nadine, and
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Line 5, we have Joan. Hello, Joan, how are you? Joan, are you there?
Hello.
This is John, I'm sorry, John.
Yeah. Father, I was wondering, in synastry, when, let's say, in a love relationship, for example, between a man and a woman, if the combination of person's planet form one or more grand trines, does that signify anything?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, what you're looking for in synastry comparison more than anything else are trines and grand trines. You do want a couple of squares, maybe you have a few oppositions to add some energy, you know, a little spice to the relationship.
Right.
But a number of trines and also grand trines usually show a tremendous dharmic attachment, which means you might have done something together for the good of mankind, and coming back together again is like a blissful bond.
Nice.
Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to a celebrity on line number 3, Andy Lopez. Andy.
I'm a celebrity.
Is this Andy Lopez?
Yes, it is.
Aren't you the Invisible Gardener?
Yes, I am.
Aren't you personal friend to Eddie Albert?
Yes, I am.
And Farley Malaris?
Yes, I know him too.
And William Shatner?
Bill and I.
Okay, you're a celebrity. Have a nice day. Goodbye, Andy.
Teacher, I have a question for you.
Okay.
First of all,
when's your show now? What day?
You don't know?
It's Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah, Wednesday, 10:30 to 11:30.
Okay, what's your question, Guy?
My general question is really a three-parter, okay? And you'll probably be the only one that can really answer this. The first part is, you know, we're going into the Aquarian age, right?
We're there.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, so the first part of the question is, can you tell the audience how long each age was? You know, how long the Piscean age was, how long this Aquarian age was?
The great month is 2,000 years, and the great year is 24,000 years.
So you're saying that each age is 2,000 years?
Yeah, it takes the sun with the entire solar system 2,000 years to move across the influence of one zodiac sign.
Okay. Now, the second part is, when was the last Aquarian age? And then the third part is, what society, what civilization was there, what happened?
The last Aquarian age was during the Atlantean epoch, and they went through the same exact choices that we here on this planet are currently being confronted with. And they blew themselves out of the water, melted down with no trace after a great war. But there was a period of bliss and of consciousness that followed that great war in North America with the American Indian settlements, who were the survivors of the Atlantean epoch. So a lot of souls did evolve during that Aquarian age to higher levels. I'd say approximately 300 million souls did evolve beyond this dimension, maybe more. And at the same time, another 5 billion didn't, and that's why we currently are populated in this planet with approximately 5 billion souls.
Marty, do you feel that we're going to do the same thing over again? We're going to mill ourselves down and start over from scratch?
It's very possible, Andy. I don't like to think of that ultimatum. That's why when I think of New Zealand or Australia as the next empire or the next civilization of man on this planet, possibly, or even Canada, possibly, you know, I don't like to think of America no longer being here, But then again, Andy, no one wanted to think that Atlantis would disappear either, you know. So it depends what kind of lunatics we have running this planet. The leadership that we choose now is very important and vital, as we're not aware of how important the presidential election is, even though we do feel helpless and powerless in choosing people as president, because the media does affect the nomination of the president tremendously. But I do feel that whoever is in control of Russia and America and China in the next 10 years could very well decide whether we do melt the planet down or whether we do have a peaceful change. See, Aquarius presents a choice to us of a sudden change. It can be either overnight disarmament or, as you know, a surprise attack and utter destruction. So let's hope that the Aquarian choice this time is a peaceful one. And if we blow it, Andy, then we'll have to wait another 24,000 years for the next age of Aquarius.
Okay.
Thanks, Ann.
Love you, Charlie.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Carolyn is on line 7, or is it Caroline?
It's Caroline. Well, my question has to do with last week you had two people call you up about Yod. And you gave the dynamics as far as what it is, but what would you tell a person who had three Yods in their chart?
Well, I would probably say that they were a wizard from another dimension, and what the heck are they doing on Earth?
Well, they're here to share their spiritual strengths and information from past lives.
A Yod, in my opinion, is an extremely powerful aspect, and it offers someone incredible opportunity to absolve a major block of karma. Usually when people are born with one Yod, it has something to do with them having a major choice in a past life, possibly concerning millions of lives, and frankly, I'm sorry to say this, they may have made a mistake.
Oh, I believe that also, because you have karma, you have to come back to clean it up.
Okay, so they would come back in this lifetime with three fingers of God, and that would triply reveal the importance of them doing something very dharmic for a major block of humanity to absolve that karma. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
All right, let's go over here now to Fran on line 1. Hello, Fran.
Hi, Farley. How are you today?
So what can we do for you?
Okay, Farley, my question is, I don't know if it's simple or not, but it would be informative for me to hear the answer. If someone were born while Mercury was in retrograde, what general effect would that have on those individuals as compared to the others of us who were not born in Mercury retrograde?
Well, the Mercury retrograde energy, usually, because Mercury is such a vital planet in the natal chart, it rules the nervous system, the thought processes. It also rules communication, thinking, a lot of times decision-making ability, and introvert-extrovert factors, and also being shy, and all this stuff that's very important for us concerning success and leadership. And usually, people born with Mercury direct definitely may be normally and naturally more outgoing and more extrovert, more enthusiastic, and could have a quicker mind. Now, it doesn't mean that people with Mercury retrograde are slower. What it does mean that people with Mercury retrograde are being given and offered a challenge at a very early age, which means some of your fastest minds in the world could eventually be people with Mercury retrograde because the challenge that confronts them. Because see, all the souls start out with the same starting point. Mm-hmm. When we're born in a baby's body, we absorb different vibrations from different planets that create certain challenges for our soul to strive for, to overcome. That's why Mercury retrograde people, some of them are the more successful people on this planet because they recognize the challenge at an early age and they tackle it if they're smart. Other thing that I find interesting with Mercury retrograde people is their lives start happening better when Mercury is retrograde. Everybody else's lives are falling apart. Mercury retrograde people take off at that point. Then when Mercury's direct, it seems like they're more prone to a little confusion, decision-making problems, mechanical breakdowns and such as that. And, you know, Mercury goes retrograde, I believe, about 2 or 3 times a year, and so it's not that bad for them. You know, they still have 1/3 or 1/4 of the year there to pull out. Okay?
Okay, very good. Thanks, and I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Let's go to line 8, Dia. Hi, Dia.
Hi.
Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, what can we do for you?
Oh, I just have a real simple question. Could you tell me the difference between the Koch system and the Equal Health system?
Yes, there are several different house systems available to people that study Western tropical astrology. Koch, Regimentanus, Campanus, Placidus, or Equal House. And basically, the people that have developed the other house systems believe that depending where you're born on the planet Earth, considering longitude and latitude, that there's a different effect from the zodiac signs on different parts of the Earth, which makes some houses seem larger than others, and other houses seem smaller than others. So Koch, Placidus, Regimentanus, and Campanus are what we call the unequal house system, where sometimes whole signs can be swallowed up in a house. Like you could be a Libra rising, and then Sagittarius might start your second house, and Scorpio would be swallowed up in the first house, which they kindly refer to as intercepted houses, which I don't believe in. Mm-hmm. Because equal house astrology for me is quick, is easy. I use the center of the earth as my guide, because I believe that equal house astrology, in my opinion, is like a psychic astrology, where my mind's eye can see someone's chart and all their houses in equal setup. So like if you're Libra rising 15, then Scorpio 15 starts your second house, and Sag 15 starts your third house, and then Aries 15 is your descendant, and then Cancer 15 is your midheaven, so you can jump over to descendant and fourth house and eighth house and 12th house in a second. Whereas with Koch or the other house systems, you have to actually have the chart in front of you, which would make this show impossible for me to do. Okay?
Okay.
So equal house astrology is actually the key behind the success of me being able to interpret people's lives on the radio. Now, I'll tell you this. I do respect all the other house systems in this order, Placidus first, and then Koch, and then Campanus, and then Regimentanus, because they all do hold value. I just feel that equal house is the best for my purposes. That's why we will do astroscopes and transits in any house system requested, because we have the technology to do them all. Okay?
Okay, what is the center of the Earth?
The nucleus of the planet, the physical center.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Let's go to Cliff now on line 6. Hey, Cliff.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you today?
Excellent.
My question about whether the stars impel or compel, you've probably heard this question before, I'm sure, but it's a little different twist. Insofar as I've come across, and I'm an astrologer myself, and I've been studying the concept of the cosmic twin.
Yeah.
And I wondered what you felt about this, whether you felt there was any validity in this at all. And as a matter of fact, I'm a writer as well, and I'm writing a screenplay based upon this concept. Curious to see what your viewpoint is, whether you think there is any validity in the cosmic twin concept.
Well, you know, Sidney Omar is the astrologer who, I believe, birthed the saying that he felt the stars impel and they don't compel. But the longer I'm into this, Cliff, I have to say, I don't know, because sometimes I feel like certain things truly are destined to happen. And I do feel that the stars literally, like, gong the bell or lower the boom on you at certain timely points in your life when certain things are just meant to happen. So I would have to say that I feel that they definitely do impel you. But some of the most intense transits, the heaviest transits, I'd have to say that the planetary movements do definitely compel action. How do you feel about it?
Well, I feel that having studied several people's charts that have roughly the same charts, I notice if they have more of a fixed count in their chart, they will tend to be more similar than if they have a mutable or cardinal count.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me if they have more of a mutable count, they have more of a leeway of karmic play as far as being impelled versus the fixed.
Okay, so you think that people with more of a fixed chart,
they may have been born with a karma that compels them to a more rigid format rather than perhaps a mutable.
Hmm. What's the name of your play? Can you tell us?
I don't have a title for it as yet. I'm still in the process. I've written several screenplays, and I'm just in the process of getting them produced.
Well, if you ever get anything produced that's along these lines, let me know so I can come take a look at it.
Have you been interested in acting?
Of course. Are you kidding? I have a Bachelor of Arts in Drama. Are you kidding?
Great.
Yeah, definitely. Central Methodist College.
Possibly. About to.
Okay, Cliff.
Okay, have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was a great question. That was a real good question. Let's go to Bert now. Hi, Bert.
Hi, Farley. How are you?
Real good.
Great, great. A terrific idea to do a show like this, by the way.
Well, this is our fourth week doing the No Forecast Monday, and we have a certain group of people that are addicted to listening to Mondays now, the whole show. Because of all the information that comes out.
It's wonderful. I had a question when I called, but in typical Libra fashion, I'm not sure I heard another one that triggered from another question. Anyway, the one I called with has to do with the reincarnation of a soul. I understand that souls reincarnate as twins. In other words, we all have a twin running around someplace.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I have found that I believe in my own personal ideology that before incarnation, there is a cellular break between a soul where one part of that soul will incarnate as one person, and the other part of the soul will incarnate as another person. And in the quest for people trying to find their oneness with God, they usually accidentally or for whatever purpose, sometimes in a destined way, stumble on that twin soul. You know, it's very uncomfortable, let's say, if you've been happily married for 15 years and then all of a sudden, boom, you meet somebody that you could identify as a twin soul. It's like, now what? But what I have found in my quest that a soul mate would be somebody more that you would have karma with and not necessarily a positive experience as much as an agony and an ecstasy experience. Same with a soul twin, somebody that would be designated as literally your other half, maybe even more of an agony ecstasy experience because of the self-confrontation you're dealing with, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because you're confronting yourself, in effect.
Oh, definitely. Do you think you found yours?
Yeah.
Is this a woman or a man?
A woman.
Okay, is this somebody you're romantically interested in?
Yes. Uh-huh.
How's it going?
Oh, very well.
How long have you known each other?
Well, a long time, and we've had to work through a lot of stuff, 15 years ago.
You're married, then?
No, not
not anymore. Do you fight a lot?
Early on, but not anymore.
Why would you identify them as a soul twin? What would clue you into that?
She's a karmic astrologer and has worked up a chart that indicates strongly that that's the case. And then it's been verified through certain psychic readings, totally separate readings that are validated independently. So it's, we feel quite confident that that's the case.
In the long run, Bert, the highly evolved you get in consciousness, the more of a connection you will feel with all people who in the nth degree end up being your soul twin because of the oneness we all share. But on our quest back to the light, in our quest back to the source, we need this limitation and this bonding with one person first, sometimes, before we are opened up to the fact that we have the same bonding with all people beyond that.
Mm.
Does that help you any?
Does very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Wendy on line 3. Hi, Wendy.
Hi there, Farley.
Yo, I've been to Wendy's before, but not anymore. I'm trying to be holistic. I'm just kidding. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm calling about what astrology has to do with the spirit who is of the walk-in nature. Are you familiar with the walk-in?
Yes, okay. What I do believe is that if somebody is destined to be what is called or identified in my mind as a walk-in, that what you're dealing with is a multiple attachment of multiple souls to one human body.
Okay.
And let's say that a baby is born destined to be occupied by four distinct souls that are all attached to that baby, one soul would dominate at a time. Meaning that if one entity wanted to run that baby's life from 0 to 10, then let's say the baby would fall off the roof at 10, and that soul would be severed from the body, then the next soul would walk in, so to speak, which has been kind of holding out, charging out in the astral plane all that time. See, I don't believe a soul can walk into a body without having an intimate relationship with that body at birth. That's why I do believe in the multiple silver cord attachment theory that has to do with having many souls attached to one body. Now, the funny thing about this, Wendy, is that if you can identify a specific time in your life or anyone's life where that trauma does occur, you know, where the kid would fall off the roof and then, so to speak, never be the same again, or like what happened to me in May of 1962, when I was shot in the eye with a BB ricochet, in which case I was never the same again. Also, in 1976, when I had a vision experience in Hong Kong, that sort of thing could have happened to my body. And by having the date, the time, and the city of that experience, you could cast yet another natal chart of the walk-in spirit.
Oh, I see.
See, the original natal chart charges the body, and that stays with the body the whole life. If there's another soul that attaches itself to the body after one leaves, then we would call that the walk-in chart.
Okay.
And we would use that in addition to. But how many people know to cast a walk-in chart the minute they have that rebirth? You got to be pretty evolved to catch that puppy, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot, Farley.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Eric, did you get disconnected before?
Yeah.
Okay, what can we do for you, guy?
Okay, is this on the radio right now?
It depends what you have to say.
Okay, I wanted to know if the planets Jupiter and Pluto between April 15th and May 1st, if that is going to definitely have an effect on the Earth.
Yeah, that right there is what we call the Nostradamus effect.
Uh-huh.
It's a Scorpio-Taurus opposition. It's very volatile, could be dangerous, could be a life-and-death experience for some people. And obviously, the fixed signs, Leo, Taurus, Aquarius, and Scorpio are the ones that are going to be most affected by this transit, which could be a life-destiny-shaping transit.
Right.
A lot of people feel that things are going to be hopping by then on this planet in many ways. So we're going to fasten our seatbelts and see what happens.
All right.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you very much.
And you were on the air, Guy.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's go to Solomon now on line one. Hi, Solomon.
Hi, Farley. Farley, I realized that knowledge is transmitted through writing, ritual, and symbolism. And I would like to ask you, why did the founding fathers made in the $1 bill, the pyramid, and the phoenix?
The founding fathers of the United States, Solomon, was a very mystical group. In fact, if the Astrology Hour would have been around back then I'm sure they probably would have shut down their business at 12 noon to tune in. Because these guys, I would think, in comparison, including Jefferson and Franklin and Adams and Madison and Washington, were all what we call Rosicrucians, which is a metaphysical Christian cosmic fellowship that existed back then. And they were all into astrology and metaphysics and reincarnation, and they definitely delved into the unknown. And there was a mystical ceremony, a sacred ceremony that was held to help bless the founding of this country and sanctify it. And that's why some of these very mystical symbols were placed on the monetary situations as a lasting way to surround the United States with a godlike vibration of love and light. Because the pyramid and the third eye are very protecting focal points of mysticism and cosmic protection.
And how about the phoenix bird?
The phoenix symbolizes the rebirth and the rising from the flames of the old way unto the new way, because America was destined to be a nation on earth of freedom and of expression of free will, which was a metaphysical contrast in a way.
And how about the 13 stars and, you know?
Okay, that would be the 12 signs of the zodiac plus one for good luck. And the 13 colonies would be the 12 signs of the zodiac plus one for good measure. And besides, 13 is a very powerful number for balance and for a good foundation.
So America is the country that's supposedly to bring peace on this planet Earth?
Well, that's what the initial idea was, Solomon. Let's hope and pray and see what happens. I'm not too happy with the American innocent Indian genocide that followed that. So we'll have to see what karma dictates for this country. I got to go. Thank you, Solomon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, see you real soon. Weekdays on the Fox, 93.5 FM at 12 noon. Have a nice day.